Welcome back to Theater Cleaners. We're stoked to be around for a second season. It might look a little different because 12 Midnight just got into their new headquarters, so we got a fresh little space for us to hang out at and talk about these films. Today we're going to be talking about an absolute classic here in the office that we've all talked about multiple times. But the person that we brought along to talk about this is our good buddy and classic, Theater Cleaners rep over here, Dylan Wallace. He's back again talking about another movie that we're probably not qualified to talk about.
And the last Black man rep.
Yeah. So, how excited are you to be back with us, though?
I'm pretty stoked.
That doesn't look stoked.
I didn't really look excited.
I'm a little nervous. It's been a while.
That's fair.
It's been a while.
I mean, shit, I'm kind of nervous, too.
Well, let's add to that then, Dom, because I need you to give a synopsis on this film real quick.
Why you always make me do it? I'm never prepared for this.
It's the last Black man in San Francisco.
All right. The brief synopsis is, I don't know who wrote this, but I'm going to read it word for word.
Okay, so this is now Jiminy about Crickets. Pinocchio.
Wow.
Can
Jiminy,
we reset?
Shut the fuck up.
No, we're letting it ride.
Hold on. Relax.
This is just a fireside chat, dude.
I'm good.
God, this guy is late to the fucking shoot. Now he's laughing.
I was late.
Yeah, seriously.
I was golfing.
All right, ready?
Wow, Jim, I guess we're less important than golf, huh?
Dom, floor is yours.
Thank you. Do I have to, like, hold up the quiet coyote for you? That's a peace sign. God. Holy shit, we're on camera now, too. This is, like, way scarier.
We were on camera last time, too.
I know, but, like, not really, but kind of. All right. Jimmy and his best friend, Mont, try to reclaim the house built by Jimmy's grandfather, launching them on a poignant odyssey that connects them to their past, even as it tests their friendship and sense of belonging in the place they call home. I hate reading out loud because that brings my anxiety and my dyslexia to the fucking top. But I nailed it. I got poignant, and I don't even know. I just guessed.
I thought you did great.
That was a good shot in the dark, dude. You really nailed it.
P-O-I-G-N-A-N-T. That doesn't sound like poignant at all, but all right.
No, it's an absolute mouthful, but you nailed it, buddy. It
sounded poignant coming from you.
I don't even know what that word means, really. What does it mean? Like the like?
I actually
like
don't know.
Like a pinnacle, kind of? Like, I feel like it's similar to pinnacle.
I wrote that, and I don't even know what it means, dude. I just knew it sounded good.
Evoking a keen sense of sadness or regret.
That fits.
It's fitting.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, I feel like you got to use big old lofty words when you're describing this movie because it's absolutely fucking beautiful. And
it's
like,
true.
I know this was your first time watching it, Dom, so I want you to take the floor.
Please.
What were your thoughts going into this movie? What were your expectations? I know we hyped it up a little bit. So did it hit those expectations? Did it fall a little flat?
Can I preface the whole thing with,
yeah, preface.
We had a tally on the whiteboard at the office after I watched this movie because it blew my mind and it was all I could talk about and it was all I could ask. Hey, has anyone seen this? Has anyone watched this? So for 2 years at 12 Midnight, I've been hyping this movie up. A couple people have seen it. Todd's watched it a few times now.
Yeah, I've seen it three
times.
And
I know that I hyped it up to you. So yeah.
So I don't want to disappoint you. But in the end, I thought the movie was actually great. So, no, it was fantastic. I went into it with the understanding from what you had said that it was going to be like cinematically and visually stunning. And it is. When it opened, it felt, I was kind of caught off guard a little bit because it felt almost, I don't even know what the word I'm trying to find is.
But the opening scene?
Just the opening first few sequences of the movie were lit and styled in a certain way that it felt like, kind of felt Wes Anderson-y a little bit.
I can see that.
Like the way it was shot, the blocking and the colors and the just like visual style of it felt like Wes Anderson-y.
And the way the camera moved along with it, because that opening shot is just an absolute long shot going in, and then it only cuts once you get to the guy on the soapbox, and it just basically is like resetting on it. It doesn't feel like an abrupt cut either.
Yeah, it just kind of felt, maybe what felt the most Wes Anderson-y was kind of the whimsicalness of it.
I see
that. It felt a little like a storybook almost at the beginning.
The way it's lit.
way it's lit.
It's a little different.
The way the characters dress themselves and the way that the camera was interacting in the world, it felt almost storybooky or Wes Anderson-y.
I think the narration ties in with that.
That also too a little bit. But then it definitely started to progress and like mature in a weird fictional sense of the word, kind of where it changed and morphed into a different visual style, but it still kind of it moments went back to that same kind of storybooky feel, especially when they were back at Mont's home with his that was his grandfather, right?
yeah that was his grandfather
with
also in great Mont's casting home. By the way,
oh sorry, yeah.
Just want to chime that in there.
Apparently he approached them about the movie.
He's a San Fran native.
He's from San Francisco.
We're talking about
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover. In this specific point, they it was when they were doing their crowdfunding. I forget what service it was. You said it was like,
I think it was GoFundMe.
Their GoFundMe. He found out and heard about it and was like, "Hey, I want to be in this. I like it."
Apparently, Danny was a big civil rights activist. That's what I learned.
I didn't know this film.
That adds to it a little bit,
and that's why. So he was native of San Fran.
Yeah,
wanted to be involved because he apparently used to be on the picket signs back in the 60s.
Damn.
So, nice. Respect.
Yeah.
In that respect.
I feel like San Francisco, maybe the Bay Area as a whole, kind of, you're from there, so you'd know, mm-hmm. kind of has like that aura that people are really passionate about being from the area.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%.
Everybody I know who's from there always reps it or knows how to bring it up in a normal conversation that's not tied to
it
at all.
A really normal way to bring up like cities and sports teams from the area.
Why don't you turn and just show the camera what you're doing here.
Oakland Athletics and stuff, which they're possibly gonna move in the next few years.
Yeah, Vegas,
that's been being said for so long though.
Yeah, but now it's getting a little more
serious. This one might be the move.
Well, you know,
it might be, but you know,
you can't hate the city unless you love it.
I mean, this year we're really awful. Like, we're the worst in the entire league. So
what a great segue.
Oh shit. Yeah, it was a line
what
from
a great
the movie.
Segue.
I was too focused on the A's moving that I was like off topic. And
I mean, this is Rangers country, so we're gonna skip the A's talk.
We're just gonna breeze right over it, bud.
Don't even act like either of you care about the Rangers. Let's be honest.
Hey, whoa!
I'm jaded. I've been a lifelong Rangers fan.
Dog, yeah,
crazy. Come on.
I got photos from 2011 World Series. So
yeah,
wow, damn, dude.
You know how hard I died inside when Nelson Cruz jogged to the third out to win the World Series and missed it. And then we ended up losing the World Series. That hurt my soul. Yeah.
That was a lot deeper than I thought he was going to get.
I mean,
I
wouldn't
care about baseball that much.
Dude, I love baseball.
Nice.
Yeah, it's classic American sport, dude.
Hell yeah.
It is.
Let's move back to
the last Black Man
in San Francisco.
Yeah, because you didn't pick up on my segue, dog.
I could go back
on. But speaking of segue, how fucking whack was that segue tour? Because the tour guide was always saying, like, everything he said on the tour or to the tourists was like a negative connotation to something about the city of like, oh yeah, this is the area where all the Japanese were like taken for the, like to be forced into like labor camps or whatever. Or like, oh, over here is the hideaway to where so-and-so had to hide out from whatever. And it was just like,
yeah.
So it all like comes together.
So one of my initial thoughts after watching the movie, we have this document Todd likes to have us do, and it's thought points, kind of. What do we think? And it gets us to think about how we watch the movie and think about stuff we talk about. I don't know if we brought that up last time.
No, because honestly, we do have to do that. Otherwise, I don't think these boys would fully get themselves ready for this.
Well,
that's all.
But, maybe, but speak for yourselves.
Okay, guy, you were late today.
I was late today. Damn. I've watched the movie 5 times now.
Well, okay,
so
you know what? I watched the movie for this.
I'm prepped.
I think we all did.
I'm prepped.
So, like I was saying, one of the first initial things that I thought about after I watched this movie was I grew up in the Bay Area and I grew up going to the city all the time. I wouldn't say I'm from San Francisco, but I definitely had a lot of experiences there. Used to go on field trips there all the time to like Chinatown when I was in sixth grade. We used to go to like learn about cultures of where we're growing up in the Bay Area and that kind of stuff. And one of the big ones was we would go to San Francisco and go to Chinatown and then just explore the city.
That's dope, actually. If that was a field trip, really cool. I would be so stoked.
It's so foreign to me. As
that was like in fifth grade or something like that. And I would just go to the city all the time. I would go to Giants games with my buddies. Like, I went to Candlestick a few times. And just be in SF all the time. I'd like to go take pictures there all the time.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place, too. I mean,
yeah. And I, my grandfather grew up in San Francisco. So, like, I have some heritage there, but not, like, the same deal as this at all. But one of the big things that I saw about this movie was it's a love letter to San Francisco, but it's also not afraid to make fun of it at every moment it can.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought was really funny was like, damn, that's like jabbing San Francisco, like in the spot that it like likes to think it's the best at, is when Jimmy's chilling in the bus stop and the naked dude walks up.
Dude, I loved that moment.
And then a bunch of young kids roll up, the tech bros roll up on the fucking trolley. And dude, I'm not gonna lie, I know a lot of my friends that grew up outside of San Francisco and now live there and they're all like tech bros and shit. Sorry if anybody's watching this and you're like kind of making fun of you. But that's like a thing that happens. And it's like, I'm not surprised that like this dude that's naked, who's like the epitome of like, what is San Francisco? Fucking weirdos.
Yeah.
And like, it's like fine to be a weirdo in that city.
Like a Haight Ashbury.
Like, dude. Yeah, exactly.
But
like,
also, how kind of great was that dialogue, though?
Yeah.
Also, between Jimmy and the naked dude, but also the fucking tech
this
bros.
Dude,
this
fucks.
Guy fucks.
Yeah.
This guy fucks.
It's just, I thought that was like, that was one that like, I thought was hella funny because there's just like a naked dude in San Francisco, which is something that like is really weird to say that's kind of common.
Totally. Dude, normal. I wasn't like, shocked not, when I saw it.
Yeah. Like the amount of people you saw in that movie to the amount of naked people you saw in the movie was like one to a lot.
I feel like that's how it could be.
That's kind of what it is in San Francisco. Like you might just see that.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if it's legal or not, but it's like a thing that like when I grew up, you'd like hear about it. Like, oh yeah, there's just fucking people walking around in the nude in San Francisco. And it's like,
there's always something.
Why is that? And then that guy is like the person you want to be like in that movie, him and Jimmy are the ones that you want to feel like are like, oh, those are the guys we're like that they're fighting for San Francisco for, not like the tech bros.
Not the tech bros.
I just thought it was like really funny. It's just like they're making fun of San Francisco in every moment they can.
They had another callback to that, the opening sequence, the slow-mo one, where the homeless guy's running down the street and he's like, where are you going?
And you're right.
Undressing and they're just flying by on a skateboard, probably on drugs or something, has no idea what's going on.
Oh yeah, no, you're not
dude,
wrong.
There's so many good little touches and like little hidden moments all throughout the film, and like it's a huge film for cameos, but honestly I didn't pick up on any of them. It's just something I read after the fact of like basically there was like six different cameos and you don't get it unless you're kind of like from there or part of the culture or whatever. But it was like, it was really cool to see, and even though I'm not like a San Fran native and I've only been there like once or twice, it's still a beautiful movie for just the normal person to watch, because it's genuinely like, it is a love letter to San Francisco and it does paint that picture so well. And like, I love that you're from there and you can talk on the points that are like the native would pick up on.
Yeah.
It's cool to hear.
I definitely wouldn't say I'm an SF native, but
no, you're close enough.
Yeah. In this group here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I'm catching you though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been to San Fran five times.
Five times?
Yeah. I think I'm almost
once for
a native.
Each time you've watched the movie?
Yeah. I'm almost a native now.
Hey, not bad.
Hey, not at all.
No, I feel like I've been there five times. It's probably my favorite city I've ever traveled to. And
interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. Golden Gate Park.
It's a wildly beautiful city.
It's crazy.
And this movie really bangs on a point that's like sad about it, is it's kind of falling apart a little bit.
Yeah. Dude, I even made a note, like it was right after the scene where Jimmy bumps into his mother on the bus and they're getting off the bus stop or whatever, and it feels like they're walking into a war zone with all the smoke from, like one of the fires going on, and it's like that really like roots the viewer in like, yo, this city is beautiful, but there are a lot of like problems and shit's going down over here, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of problems in San Francisco, and it's really sad because it is a super beautiful city. Like, it's a visually stunning movie, and this movie does justice to it. All of the architecture in San Francisco is so iconically San Francisco. Like, those Victorian houses that they're talking about is such an iconic factor of San Francisco. Oh, it's true. It's so, a lot of those houses are just absolutely beautiful. And
well, it's like a landmark staple of San Fran too, because it's like everybody knows about the Painted Ladies or whatever. Is that what they're called, right?
That is what they're called.
Yeah. Yeah. Like everybody knows about it, but it's like, even if you've never been there, you still know it.
Definitely.
It's iconic.
Yeah. And I think one of my, kind of going back to like architecture slash like visuals, is one of my favorite shots in the entire movie is the really, can you guess? It's a really long lens and I like that shot.
Oh, him coming down on the
skateboard? Him coming down the hill, but it's got the big bridge in the background.
Yeah.
And it's this crazy, long, massively long lens. And it's just, it looks so sick.
It's a beautiful shot.
Yeah.
But I also loved the shot right before it, where Jimmy's sitting on the backside of an acai truck.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like riding on the back of it, not on his skateboard. He's just sitting on the back ledge. And it was just like an interesting and like captivating shot with great imaging, but it was like those two shots together, that moment really hit for me.
Yeah, that's true. Something that's kind of adjacent to this, but they have so many different spots in this movie that they like pick out of like iconic San Francisco stuff that maybe not somebody from that area wouldn't get. I don't know if you would ever go to these places, but just outside the city and around the area, like in the bay,
give us
a lot of
example.
These shots, like where
like from the movie, which ones?
So where the grandpa lives, kind of out like in the bay, it's kind of like away from the city. It's kind of out like in the boondocks, but it's not really. Like that's like, to me, when I first saw that, I was like, damn, that reminds me, like, I don't live in the bay anymore. And that's this kind of stuff you used to see all the time. It's just like, it was like outskirts of like Marin area where it's just like the water, I don't know how toxic it really is. I wouldn't ever go swimming in it, so who knows if it's actually like that. But like, it's just like the area is so beautiful, even in like the more like run down areas, it's like the landscape is so pretty.
And oh,
like,
yeah,
where Jimmy's aunt lives,
yeah,
which I could be totally wrong, they never really say it, but I think that's more of like north of San Francisco across the Golden Gate Bridge up in Lake Marin Headlands. That's some of the most beautiful place I've ever seen. I love going over there. Whenever I used to go to the city, I like hang out in the city for a bit, then go over there for like a few hours. And it's always just like the most.
Is that the place where you'll always see like the inverted fog and you're up higher on
kinda.
Golden rolling hills?
Yeah, kind of. So it's up in the hills kind of. And there's these old, I'm just kind of splurging about San Francisco.
Yeah, no, keep going. I mean, that's kind of the same like vibe as the movie.
It's the theme.
It's those on the north side of the Golden Gate Bridge, there's these old military like gun positions from like way back in whenever. I don't know exactly when they're built, but I think they're built in late.
What do we call them? Bunkers?
They're bunkers. They're like technically called batteries. They call them batteries.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. So there are these old gun positions that are all concrete, like bunkers, but
it's like a fort.
It's like a fort, kind of. It's not like one massive thing. It's a bunch of different ones along the cliff side to where if some enemy ship was trying to sail into the bay, they'd get fucking blasted to shit. Sorry, that was my shoe. They don't have the guns there anymore, except for a couple ones over like on Baker Beach. They have like some historical ones, but up there, I used to go like up there with my buddy and we would like take shots of him skateboarding up there and sick. It's like the coolest spot and it's just like some really beautiful stuff. And that, when Jimmy went to his aunt's house, it just like really reminded me of just like the outskirts of San Francisco, like the outer areas that if you didn't really know that area, you might not get, but it really brought me back to like memories of stuff that I've done. I'm like, damn.
It's nostalgic for you.
Yeah, yeah. It was super nostalgic, even though I'm not from San Francisco.
Yeah, it's still just, like an area going. That you were around often. Yeah. It's like when I was still living not here, I would still get nostalgic about Texas. And even when I'm living here, I'm like, oh, this place kind of sucks. But it's like the same homage of like, you can't hate it unless you love it. Like,
exactly.
I do love this place, but
that's true.
Yeah.
Like right now in the middle of the summer and it's a fucking 106. I'm not really stoked to be living here, but it's like, it's the place I chose.
Yeah.
Do you think, did y'all understand the, you can't hate it if you don't love it?
I didn't until like
the first
right
time,
now
well,
when,
watched it once,
when we were talking about this a little more, like after I was just kind of talking about San Francisco and then Todd said that line again. At first I was like, oh yeah, I mean, of course you hate something if you don't love it. But now I realize like, I've loved San Francisco and I've loved going to the city for as long as I can. And I hate the fact that it's like basically, I'm on par with Jimmy. I hate the fact that it's like changing to what it is now.
Yeah,
gentrification. It sucks.
No, and it's like even on my first watch of this movie, I remember that line really hit for me because it was like, because it's showing like the what feels like the tech girls or whatever that are just moved in and are implants or whatever.
On the bus and they're just like,
yeah, and they're talking shit.
And it's he's like, and he's like trying to defend it. He's like, no, you can't hate it if you don't love
I kind of interpret it like you can't hate it if you don't know it. That's the way I break it down now.
Well, it's also like,
no, I see that.
He's,
I definitely see that.
You can't hate something unless you actually know it.
I also see,
but also like, those girls haven't been there long enough to really have that same type of love for the place, you know? Like, and that's what I can see being like someone in Jimmy's point of view of like, you've grown up, you've seen the changes, and you've had to be there for it. You're stuck there, kind of. And it's like, that's where you really know you can love it or whatever, even love and hate it, you know? Because those girls were all talking about like, oh, why don't we just move back to LA or whatever? And it's like, they have that liberty of just being able to pack up and move to somewhere different.
Yeah. Whereas the Jimmys of the world, his families, they don't.
Yeah.
I think something that you can kind of relate it to is if you're ever like hanging out with buddies, you talk shit to your friends all the time, right? But if someone comes along and talks shit to your friend,
it's not cool.
You're like, what the fuck, dude? Hey, who the fuck do you think you are?
That's the whole.
But then you'll turn around and talk shit to your friends.
Yeah.
Because you can't hate
I only get to talk shit to Dom.
Right? Well, even then, how you tie it back to the fucking movies, that's the whole thing of Kofi and his group.
Yeah.
They're all just talking shit to each other. And then the reason Kofi ends up getting, you know.
Well, that's a good segue into toxic masculinity.
True.
Fair enough.
Which is what kind of got him. I thought that was a subtle. I didn't pick that up until the last time I watched it. And I was like, okay, I kind of understand what's going on here. You know, he didn't. Kofi's really more similar to Jimmy and maybe Mont.
100%.
But he can't really, you know, he's got to fit in with his boys.
But he grew up somewhere where being like that is a detriment to yourself.
Right.
Absolutely. But it's also. Yeah. Oh. Okay. But it's also like, you know, after everything plays out with like what happened with Kofi, him coming over, turning on Jimmy at the interaction or whatever, and then his ultimate demise or whatever, it was crazy because after Kofi kind of flipped on him and they're sitting back at the kitchen or whatever, Jimmy was like, did I talk shit like that when you like first met me talking to Mont? And Mont's like, yeah, you fucking talk shit like that. And it was like, okay, if someone that grew up with Kofi, Jimmy, can, you know, grow up, move, get into a different headspace, it's very much like, you know, when they invited Kofi over to their house, had the schvitz or whatever, that felt like that moment to where Kofi might make that change and like kind of grow up and get out of that toxic masculinity that he's in.
It's just too little, too late.
Exactly.
I know this is a different episode, but this is really similar to The Moonlight.
Yes,
with Kevin.
Yeah, like
Kevin
absolutely.
Went through the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Where
he
was trying to fit in. You know, he didn't want to he was gay. He didn't want to admit it. I mean, this is the last black man, but it's kind of odd how both movies that we've done have had the same theme.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you do pick these movies you're on it.
Maybe that's
you
a
might.
Thing.
Yeah, that I, might be. That's a, is it? We don't have to get into like psychology over here. This ain't a therapy session, dog.
That's pretty
but,
wild, honestly.
Yeah, you might want to talk about that with Lauren tonight.
Well, look, I know this. I'm a sucker for intense stories.
I get that
emotional stories.
No,
you like really intense drama.
I like
stories.
Intense. I've had a wild life, childhood, and I feel like. It probably all ties to that. I love documentary filmmaking.
You feel the rest. Raw, you get more out of something that you can kind of relate to than
even if it's very different.
Yeah.
But it's still like thematically, it's kind of weird. This is weird that we just found that out.
Yeah.
This is therapy.
This is
sponsored by BetterHelp.
Yeah, straight up. Please give us money.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, Moonlight set in LA, right?
Miami.
Okay. It's just like, you can kind of relate to the same thing. It's like, those are places where the two ends of like economic status are really close together in those areas. Like the poorest of the poor and like the richest of the rich are so close together in terms of like vicinity,
proximity.
They're so close. That
and yet so far
in like every other way kind of in
absolutely.
That if you are born in that like kind of they seem like similar spots is like if you're born in a position where you are on the downtrodden side, the poorer side.
You're the less fortunate.
The less fortunate. You're put into a position where you feel like you have to, like culturally, it's like you have to like be more bravado about yourself. You have to like, you can't be a nice person because you're just getting taken advantage of all the time, like from society, where it's like, damn, like you're watching these guys in Moonlight and also these guys in Last Black Man. They're just like, they want to change.
You can see they like, want more than what they want.
They don't want to do what they have to do, but if they don't,
yeah,
they're trying to survive
for them.
Yeah, right?
They're just trying to survive.
Yeah,
they're trying to fit in.
Yeah,
you know, nobody wants to be the one that's the oddball.
Yeah, like no one's trying to go against the current for the most part, and those who do, they take a fucking mental beating. You know,
well, especially being, you know, I mean, I do think that that's a theme in probably the in an African American demographic. Like the toxic masculinity is kind of, you're kind of pushed to be, not pushed, but from your, you know, the people you're around.
See,
you kind of.
That's where I loved Mont's character, though, is like Mont went against the flow, went against the grain, and he never like shifted in that. And you could see in Jimmy's personality, you know, in any of those confrontations, he's kind of like the one who's sitting there a little flustered. But Mont the whole time, he's just like, I'm just staying in my lane, doing my thing.
I did think Mont was a little crazy, though. Like
off a little bit?
I mean, he wasn't, I wouldn't say crazy, but I would say he's particular.
There's just, like, this, I don't know if it was him trying to defuse the situation or what. Like, when they were all shitting on Kofi for...
Oh, and he walks up and he
directs
them?
For backing
them?
Away from a fight, and he walks up and, like, acts like he's directing them. I don't know if that was him just defusing the situation by being, like, wild or what, you know what I mean? And I was just gonna ask that, you, like, what do you guys think?
I think he's just a little weird.
He's just a little weird guy.
Yeah. You know,
like, I don't know if he was like trying to defuse the situation.
He lives in a world where he's like, he views life as the play,
but that's also what's interesting is because when he does do the play, he's just reenacting life through his point of view. Like, he's, that play is all how he saw all of those interactions, which is why that like scene was very interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the more pinnacle scenes in the whole movie, was the fact that like it boils down everything so succinctly and perfectly for you. It's just like,
even I don't know his name, the
bald dude.
Yeah, you know, well, he plays him in the play, but the bald guy, kind of the leader of the group that Kofi was in.
Yeah,
you know, and he's like, damn, it's almost like he's blind to it,
dude. And like, honestly, that. The guy, when he was like standing up and they were giving moments about Kofi or whatever, and he was just like, did I push him
too
hard?
Did I push him too hard?
And that moment of like reflection, dude, oh my God, that is like chef's kiss to that moment, dude. That is such a great piece of writing. And also like the way they shot it, it was fucking such a good moment, man.
Yeah. And that kind of all together kind of shows that like one of the whole concepts of the movie, there's a few different things that I think the movie kind of talks about. And one of them is that people are complex. And like Jimmy says, is you can't, like, not, people aren't just one thing.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just the perfect scene, of course, where he says that people aren't just one thing. But it shows that, like, even the bald guy, I forget what his name was, like you're saying, the leader of that group, it shows that, like, you know, he can be that guy, but at the same time, like, he does actually, like, he actually really did care.
Yeah,
his friends, but he didn't know how to like show it.
Yeah, that's how he shows his love.
That's how he showed his love. And also when Mont and Jimmy first find out that Kofi shot, one of the other guys in that group is like kind of squaring up to Mont.
Oh,
and then just breaks down and crying.
Well, also with that same exact scene, though, it was beautiful because like they never had to say that Kofi died. It was so evident because you walk up, you see the flowers or whatever. But then it's just on the little lanyard, and the dude's still wearing it by the time the play comes around, the RIP Kofi placard or whatever. And I thought that was like a really beautiful moment because they didn't take you out of it, you know, like they let you as a viewer kind of experience it yourself, not have to be told. You infer, and it's just like, that's good filmmaking to me, to where it's like, you don't have to tell the viewer every single thing that's happening within the film. Because it also, early on in the film, it puts it in a year, you know? Right off the bat, it tells you it's in 2019, one of the first shots.
Do you think that, I fully agree with what you're saying. and even taking a step further, do you think that it's part of the cinematography? You don't almost, it almost ties into It's Just Another Day.
Yeah.
You know, like in that, in that lifestyle, Kofi's gone. They're out on the corner, you know, more quote unquote mourning him. But for them, it's just like, you don't go to the funeral. It's just like, it's over, you know, Kofi's gone.
I could be wrong on this.
And then we go forward.
But kind of going back to that cinematography about that is like, I feel like I could be wrong, but I feel like most of the other times we see that group, it's always in a wide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then that, I don't think we see them in a wide at all. When they
I think there's an establishing shot.
Is there one?
Is one that shows the memorial on the ground.
Yeah.
And that's, okay. And it's, you know,
and then it comes tight from.
I just, maybe it's just what side. I remember.
Most
from
of the movie
is the more like intimate shots, like
yep.
Where it's closer, like mediums and close ups and that. Like maybe that's what I just remember from like the emotional impact of it, kind of. But I feel like that was shot more close than a lot of the other scenes that you see them in. Because I feel like in most of the other scenes that they're in, it's not about them. Like they're just characters in that world. And then really quickly it makes it about them for a short period. And it kind of shows that like not everybody's just one thing again. Like it kind of shows that these guys have sides to them. That wouldn't show anybody else.
Yeah.
And that's just a little, not a throwaway scene, but a little scene stuck in there that doesn't have much to do with the world outside of like those characters, but I don't know. Just a little scene to give you perspective. Where the film excels and where it kind of falls flat, in my point of view, I think it excels visually and in storytelling about the city. Like it picks so many moments. We kind of touched on it earlier, but it does so well at picking little moments of like everything it loves about San Francisco. And also at the same time, everything it makes fun about San Francisco. I think that it does it so well for me, knowing more about the city. Maybe I like get more of a sense on it versus somebody who might not be from that area and maybe have never visited it. Might not get the same kind of deal from it, but for me, that does it really well along with the visuals. And then
where did it fall flat?
I was going to say, I didn't know if we wanted to just go on to where you guys think it excels, but where I think it kind of fell flat was, it fails to provide some context for stuff sometimes. And I felt like there was a lot of places where someone might not understand what's happening if they don't know the city or haven't been paying fully attention to the story, like any moment. It doesn't provide context almost ever for anything.
I see that, yeah.
But I don't think it's a problem. I think it does. I think it tells the story in a way and really well that it doesn't need to do that.
It is what it is.
Yeah. But like at the same time, I could see like if I was trying to critique something about it, like it doesn't provide enough context for some stuff. But at the same time, there's no criteria on you needing to be a great movie to provide context for everything. Like sometimes that's just what it does. I don't know.
I feel that.
I just saw somebody walk by the window and kind of distracted me for a second.
I watched that in your eyes too. I almost turned, man.
I just saw a little.
Yeah, the little shadow coming by. That's what's weird with the new space, man.
I would also agree on the cinematography. That's the first time I watched this film. I didn't actually love the movie as a whole, but I thought.
So what do you mean by that?
Like I was like the movie itself. I wouldn't have given it. You know, I left and I was like, kind of, what did I watch?
It was that contextual thing,
yeah,
right?
Like, yeah. You know, and it
didn't provide kind of context.
Confused. Some of the parts confused me. If you're not paying attention to the whole thing, you really are going to struggle understanding a lot of stuff. I think
I agree with that.
I don't think that it. I'll start with the negative, quote unquote. I thought the playwright itself was like kind of clunky at times. Like I feel like if you're watching it, the cinematography draws you in so much that maybe you might not realize like it's a little clunky as a movie.
Yeah, I think that's the lacking context for stuff, and it feels really out of place sometimes. Like the very beginning, they've got the preacher on the soapbox preaching to them, and then it just cuts to them like in the city, like, well, where are they going? They're going to,
I mean, I feel like that was kind of establishing like sure. the vibe overall, because yeah, it's course. Like you get to the preacher man on the milk crate or whatever, and it's just like cutting to them sitting waiting for the bus, and they're like, do you think he practices this in the mirror every morning before he comes out here and does his speech? To which, great shot they added in, was that dude practicing in front of the mirror. Don't know if you caught that or not, but it was literally, they show the preacher dude or whatever that stands on the milk crate. Like halfway through the movie, they show him in front of his mirror in his bedroom practicing his speech for that day. And then it cuts to him walking up with the milk crate, setting it up, and then stepping up onto it.
I didn't catch that.
I didn't catch
really?
That.
Really? Oh my God.
If I see it, I might be like, oh, okay. I
do. Yeah, I it was a beautiful little throw in that they just added as like a transition between two correlated scenes, but it was such a juicy little piece of B-roll that I was like, this is freaking great storytelling. But I agree with both of you guys. The cinematography is great and the story does lack a little bit of that, but I don't think that the story is the driving factor of the film compared to a lot of films that we've watched before, to where like the story is the main driving factor. I think creating a feeling and invoking an emotion in the viewer is the driving factor of the story, rather than having the story be leading the charge.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is it's more, if you first watch it, kind of like Dylan's first experiences, you didn't really understand it or get it. You felt it, you just didn't understand it. Like, it's Bingo. Not telling the story through exposition and through context. It's telling the story through feeling.
And it's like a unique really what way. Yeah. It's like a unique way of telling a story, exactly. which I really enjoyed. But also, like, one of the things I was going to say about it excelling is not only the cinematography, but the editing as well, especially at the start of the film. And it's like doing those establishing shots while they're on the skateboards or whatever coming into the city.
Super slow-mo.
And it's like, well, it's super slow-mo, but then like with the music or whatever, there's up-tempo music going on. So it's like the slow-mo, but it feels fast. And then like the pacing of the cuts were perfect for what it was.
It builds right into the preacher's
absolutely
narration.
And it's like there were so many minimal and like slow camera moves that it like there's always something drawing you into the screen. And like my main takeaway from the whole film is that it's just a captivating movie. There's always something going on that's like drawing you in, whether that's the edit or the camera itself. Because like think about the scene when it's Jimmy, the grandfather, and Mont sitting on the couch, and it's like that slow dolly push in to them sitting on that couch. It's such a micro movement, but it like it gives you that sort of like anxiety of like, what's this building up to? It creates a sort of tension, and it's like that draws you in, and it's like minimalistic things that it's doing all throughout the film that keeps your attention.
Shout out to Adam Newport Barra, he's the DP.
Yeah,
yeah, I gotta plug that guy.
He's a beautiful.
He's this movie made me learn about him and made me.
Was he from San Francisco or no?
No, he's not. He's from Oregon.
Who was it again?
Adam Newport Barra.
Okay,
he's shot Euphoria. He shot The Bear. Some of Euphoria, so, The Bear.
You're saying he's pretty fucking good.
He's great. Yeah, he's my favorite it. DP.
Well, I mean, honestly, if you're going and talking like The Bear and Last Black Man and Euphoria, that's a good top three right now. He's on a tear.
That's a pretty solid.
In 95, Kendrick Lamar music video.
Oh, good. No shit.
That's Adam.
So we had him in here in town at some and point.
A lot of PG Lang stuff with Kendrick Lamar. The cool thing about him
he's
is
got a very like
his style
a crisp
he's got yeah he's got like a really like modern
he loves style. His long zooms yeah. slows long zooms if you Google his stuff you'll see the similarities it and now like now that I know what I know I've seen this five times and now I just analyze the film as when I'm watching it it's the slow zooms so
could you say that's inspiration for a project that hasn't been released yet? But
oh, it is.
Yeah, well, actually.
The segue, those slow zooms where same well, Ingenue we'll not, 24
we'll not,
to.
We'll not talk yeah, about it, what it is.
We have a music video we shot and.
Visualizer.
The same lens was used in this movie that we use. It's a 24 to 290.
It's freaking massive.
Everything,
dude.
All the other lenses were.
So would you say that this DP is inspiration for that?
For sure.
That shoot?
For sure.
It's all
probably a genuine reference, actually. Yeah.
You know what? Now thinking about it. Yeah.
It's very
Yeah.
It's very, very similar.
And I've always liked that style, and I just didn't know that that was the style.
Also, yeah, that shoot was the dawn of the jumpsuit, by the way.
It was the dawn of the jumpsuit.
That was the dawn of the jumpsuit, wow, where we eventually took our branding from.
I got a picture of you.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. That was a good day.
It was a great day.
I always love when we get to have Dom on set, too, because it kind of just feels, it's honestly a set day when we got all of us there. It feels a lot like this when we have downtime.
Yeah, it's just,
yeah.
Shoot,
except we don't normally have that much downtime.
No. Yeah, we really don't. No. But
until after, then we're like, shit. The shawarma scene from the Avengers where they're just like sitting there like, shh.
Yeah, I feel that. But
maybe
honestly, like
in this industry,
a way to segue was our lighting on that shoot. And I hope all of you people check out the 12 Midnight website or whatever when it's released, because it is a fantastic shoot.
That's a plug.
That's a full on shameless plug. OK,
I like it.
But
like
no,
it.
The lighting in this film was also great. And I wanted to see some of your thoughts, because like if I was to talk about lighting, which is so not my thing. The one part that really captivated me was the first night that they were into Jimmy's grandfather's house that he built. And it's that first morning that they're there, and there's just a fat, heavy light punching through the stained glass, and it is doing such a beautiful light spill.
Yeah. Do they shoot it on film? No, because it has that feel.
So, dude, it's A24. You know they're doing something to it.
Too many LF with Master Primes.
Okay, maybe
all,
it's
all primes, and then the any zoom shots are the
maybe they got like a ProMist or some kind of like frosty looking glass on there.
I think it's set design, man. All the glass shots, if you look at it, if you go back and watch it.
No, I'm just talking about how the light plays to the lens almost. It feels like there's this look that you can get on film is when you have really bright lights, it can penetrate through the just saw a dude walk without a shirt on by the window, and it really reminded me of that one scene.
Are we in San Fran right now, dude?
We might be.
But like I was saying, if you have a really bright light and you're shooting on film, it can penetrate all the way through the film and bounce back off it can bounce off the back and then like expose parts and give it like a really kind of weird glowy picture. An example of that that you guys wouldn't know anything about, but Todd, the one with the 12 Midnight sign where it's kind of glowy around you on film.
Oh yeah.
That's
yeah.
That kind of look.
I can pull that up and show the camera.
You can.
Blooms.
Yeah. And it's like some kind of like bloom on the film. I forget what it's called, but Zap told me about it and I was like, oh shit. Yeah, that's what that is.
You're talking about this photo, right?
Yeah. So that kind of glowiness on there is part of that look that this film had. You can replicate that in post now.
Probably in the grade.
Yeah. Grading and stuff.
I only know all this info because as soon as I watch it, who's the DP? Googled it. What has he done? Watched
yeah.
pretty much everything I could find. Watched every podcast. Listened to it. I kind of wanted to be Adam. You can call me Adam.
All right, Adam.
But yeah, that film almost has like there's a lot of times, especially in the house, it's super dark. It feels like that kind of look where it looks like it's really bright lights coming through the stained glass. It looks beautiful. It's so pretty. I don't know. I thought it was beautiful film, and I kind of thought it was shot on film for that reason. It looks like it had elements of it, but I mean you can replicate that in other ways. It's a lot easier to shoot on digital, and I'm not like blaming them at all, because this was a low budget film,
quote unquote.
Like this was not
quote unquote, but like for what it is, it was a $3 million budget, and I mean
that's not a lot for
they had to start getting it from a GoFundMe. It was like crowdsourced,
all shot on location
in terms of like a feature, and it's like a feature put on by.
But also, it didn't get that much promotion. Like, I didn't know about it until Dylan said anything. Like, there was never really promo.
I don't think it ever released in theaters.
It did great at, I think it did.
Did it?
It did great at Sundance.
Yeah, it won awards at Sundance. But
I'm shocked it wasn't up for a few awards. Oscars, yeah. Oscar-worthy.
Oh,
cinematography easily could have been a nominee.
I mean,
yeah. Score.
I know it wasn't the year it came out, but I watched it for the first time last year, and it was my favorite film I watched throughout the entire year. Like, it is beautiful, and it's like, even if you're not a cinematography or like a film person, there's so much you're gonna love with this movie.
I think it'll pop off the screen to you.
Yeah, it's
if you have no idea what you're watching and you go watch it,
it's intriguing.
Like, wow. You don't have to understand the movie. Like, going back to the thing we were talking about, even before we got to cinematography, is the you don't have to. It doesn't tell the story by making you understand it. It tells a story through making you feel to understand rather than making you understand through explaining.
You don't get to know it unless you love it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Beautiful moment.
Exactly.
Well done.
You don't get to hate it.
Yeah. You know.
Back to the cinematography. I'm a little scatterbrained right now, and I wanted to say this a little while ago, but then I want to say something else. Now I'm going back to it. Yeah, reel it back in. The at the beginning, one of those things that it felt like Wes Anderson-y, kind of felt whimsical-y, is the blocking and the camera style. But the lighting didn't feel like that. It felt different. And what it did feel like was weird, to me at least. I noticed at the beginning of the film, a lot of the stuff they were lighting outside was with like mirror boards.
Oh.
And it looks like that. And I didn't have a problem with it. I was just like, I could tell it looked like a mirror board or something. And I was like, huh.
Intentionally.
Interesting. Yeah.
I still wonder why.
Why?
What's motivating it?
It looks lit.
It almost looks like a play.
Way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It looked off.
Yeah.
Like it didn't look bad.
It looks lit.
It didn't look bad, but it looked lit.
And I think there's a reason. I don't know the reason.
Yeah.
If any of you have.
No, I don't know.
I mean,
because he knows what he's doing.
Than any of us.
Yeah. So, and the rest of the movie's not like that. Most of the time, mm-hmm. it's not like that.
Yeah.
It's always backlit. Clean.
Mm-hmm. I made a note about that. I was like, it looks like they were using mirror boards mm-hmm. for this. And I don't know if that's because that's what they could use. I don't know if they didn't have a different solution for that. I don't know what the deal was, but I could kind of tell it felt like they were using mirror boards for those first few sequences. But now thinking back after watching the whole movie, I think it was just to put you in like a, you know, this kind of feels a little storybook.
Like a stylistic.
Yeah, it's stylized.
Feels like a play. Feels
I don't
like
think
a
it was lack of gear.
Like,
I saw some BTSers.
I don't know.
They had
$3 million budget. They had a full.
Yeah, they had the whole nine. Yeah. But either way, I mean, it's still like, it's just a unified movie between all of its components. It's like every bit of it plays into another factor of it. Because like one of the things I had said on like the Run of Show when I was talking about like the story and it's just more about like the feeling invoking emotion was that like, you know, there probably are technically things that could have been better as far as like some of the camera moves or some of the lighting or whatever, but it's like for what the film is, for what the story is, every little piece, every little detail adds to it.
It all adds together to make a product that is better than any individual thing that you could have said would like change it. Like
exactly,
they're
yeah.
all purposely for that reason, because there's no right way to make a movie. There
Correct.
there are things that are more common and more like accepted and more normal, maybe. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you do all those things, you're going to make a good movie. And sometimes, we've talked about this in other episodes, and sometimes just because you do those things, or just because you don't do those things doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad movie. Sometimes that's exactly what you need to do to nail what your movie's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And this movie is supposed to make you feel what Jimmy's feeling. And it nails that. And it nails that not by doing everything textbook. It nails that by doing things how it should do it for that story.
Yeah.
And kind of going, I don't know if this is maybe too much going back, but something I just thought about was the context. It's so random. It just makes you feel instead of like actually explain stuff is like they go to the house. They don't say anything about that before they go to the house. It almost looks like they're going to break in the house or like they're going home or they're doing, I don't know what they're doing. Because they don't explain it. And then all of a sudden you get there and they're like kind of being sketchy about it and like hiding. And then what is he doing? He's painting the windowsill. Yeah,
like, but that's like, a great juxtaposition though.
Sure.
Is it's like,
exactly.
It's you think it's setting you up to think something exactly. and then it reveals another. And it's like,
exactly.
That's
and they
where
don't explain
they're doing
it
that.
Like, wait, why are you doing this? Like,
but that's why they're doing the show don't tell. It
exactly,
adds to the
exactly,
value.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's that whole feeling thing. It's like, and maybe that's why if you watch it, like you watched it the first time, you didn't get it, like you didn't under like what did I just watch? I liked it, but I don't know what I would watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the lady and her husband come back and she's just like throwing shit at him. Like
she threw the bell pepper at him.
Yeah.
And the husband's like,
yeah.
That was $3.
Yeah, it's facts. California's expensive.
Everywhere is expensive right now, dog.
That's true. That's true. But
it's randomness.
Like, it's like they don't explain that at all. Like they don't explain what she is. They don't explain she's the owner. They don't explain anything like that at all. You have to pick that up through like what they're showing you on a screen.
Inferences and context clues,
man. They don't care because they're not like explaining anything to you. They're just making you feel like they were a nuisance to Jimmy in that moment. Jimmy's just trying to do his thing. He's trying to, and then they're just like being a nuisance
on his house,
to
man.
I don't know. It's just
also,
like,
though, his. I don't get why they were so upset about him being there. If I was that couple, I would have been like, yeah, I've been meaning to get to that for like weeks, but like, thanks, man.
I think it'd be weird for some guy to show up.
But it's like weird. It's 100% weird, but he's been doing it for weeks through like context clues. We get to know that that's not the first time he's ever shown up and been there. So it's like, and he's talked to the people who live there. So I'm like, after like maybe the third or fourth time, I would be like,
I mean, come on. It's so bizarre. There's a random guy painting your water and your flowers, painting, you're just showing up.
Mm-hmm. So you'd be pissed if I just like showed up at your house and was like, hey,
I'd be weirded out. I'd be like, what does this guy want? Like, what is he trying to do?
I definitely would.
It'd be a little sketchy.
I want to do that. I'd probably paint it better. That's what I'd think. Like, okay, you're going to miss a spot. I'll
do it myself. I painted this whole building.
I mean, not you, the general you.
Oh, like, so you're saying you would do better than Jimmy? Because I feel like Jimmy was doing pretty good.
Jimmy was doing a bang up job, man. Yeah. He was in the zone, dude.
He's getting pelted by croissants and fucking.
And he's still sitting there, like,
you know, where'd he get the paint? Did he buy
Actually,
the paint?
Yeah, that's.
How did he match the color?
Well, there's
how
just one scene in this movie.
That's a big.
Does he job? Does he work?
There's one scene in the movie.
He's the night nurse.
Yeah, he's a night nurse. And one
he's
scene
the night
movie,
nurse.
It's only one scene, and he talks to the one random lady about it. I didn't. Like, it was like a throwaway scene.
I didn't even pick up on that.
Dude, Mont only has seen this five times.
And Mont,
where he's at.
Dude,
Mont has like two times.
You've seen it more than any of us here, and you've missed two great scenes.
You don't pick them all up,
Sometimes you could just be so into the movie that you just don't, like, you're in it, you're not remembering it.
Yeah.
Also, though, there's so many, like, beautiful scenes and interesting moments, great shot composition that this is, it's like, there's so much that you can't keep track of all
it
of it.
It pulls you so far in that you're, like, out.
Yeah.
It's like in what is it, Get Out, when you go in the deep or whatever.
I wrote in the run of show.
I hate Get Out for that one shot where he's like scratching the couch that like fucking irks me every time. I don't know why.
Every frame could be hung in a gallery.
I love that. That's a great moment. Yeah. Or not a great moment. That's a great thing to say.
That was a great moment of the movie.
Well, I mean,
it was
every frame.
Great
it was
moment.
A great moment of the
movie. It's a great moment. Nah, but I mean, shit, dude. They already made books about it.
Oh, yeah, dude. Here's a little segue, a little fun fact. Did y'all catch the cameo, the guy that sang, what's the song called?
Oh.
San Francisco song?
I only remember, I know it's like that, I call it the San Francisco song, but I always remember it's just like, make sure to wear flowers in your hair.
Yeah. The guy at the end, after
I think it's like,
so I grew up listening to that song all the time, just like
the original
stuff. Yeah.
That guy's version is phenomenal.
It's phenomenal.
But
I would just hear that song.
The I Got Five on it at the end.
Yeah.
He.
Is that the guy?
That's him.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mike Marshall.
Didn't know that.
Fun fact. I didn't either.
That's what I was saying earlier about the cameos.
You did tell me about that earlier.
Yeah.
But I was letting him say that because
Joe Talbot has a cameo. That's the director.
Really?
Yeah,
I don't know where.
They grew up together.
Yeah.
Jimmy's
in San Francisco.
Jimmy's mom is really Jimmy's mom.
Oh, no shit.
No,
that's Jimmy Fail's mom.
Okay. Damn.
Yep. That was actually, we could talk about that. That was a really sad moment.
It was.
Oh, yeah.
It was like really uncomfortable.
It was extremely
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, she does what it sounded like they don't.
Kind of like she didn't really give a shit.
No,
they're not a part of each other's lives.
She doesn't know her son.
Yeah,
they're not a part of each other's
lives. I got your number. I can come by.
He called her.
He's like,
I don't have a phone. How do you?
And I was like, damn, that's so uncomfortable.
And then like two scenes later, he's on his phone or whatever, or they have the iPhone out in the scene.
And she didn't go to his play. That kind of hurt me.
Oh yeah, I get
that. She didn't show up.
Did she not?
Well, also, what was wild is when they get back into the house or whatever after all their shit's been thrown out, and like Jimmy's like. When Mont's talking to Jimmy and Jimmy's like, oh, I can't go back there, referring to Mont's grandpa's house. He was talking about like, oh, my dad's over here. My mom's my aunt's over here. And like, I don't know where the fuck my mom is, you know, that kind of shit. Like that's where it's especially heartbreaking.
Yeah. It was really uncomfortable. And it's just like, damn. No, she didn't give a shit about him at all. And like what he was doing. Like, she heard about the house. She's like, oh, yeah, I got the house, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, cool.
Cool. Yeah, like, I'll come
as we
by.
Talk about this, I'm kind of, it's revealing how Jimmy didn't have anything but the house.
That's all he had, yeah.
The house was his. Mont's not his. He had someone to be that was there for him. But the only thing that Jimmy really had was the house.
That's
100%.
The house.
house.
That's the whole part of that play scene, is he knows that's kind of all he has, and he knows it was a lie the whole time.
He doesn't want to admit it.
But he didn't want to admit it because it's all he had.
So yeah.
Yep.
Damn.
And that's,
it hurts. It's deep.
That's why that the scene with Jimmy and his aunt after the play or whatever, that was a really like deep scene for me, because it was like Jimmy's first time admitting that he was like,
paint
I knew it wasn't
us.
True, you yeah. know, but I just wanted to believe it so bad.
Yeah.
And like that just moment, it was like a good pause, especially having it be like pretty close to right after the play or whatever. It was like a good breath.
So for me, part of that missing context is I wasn't sure for a while if they actually ever lived there or not, or if it was just a story that his grandfather built the house.
Part of what
but
keeps
I think,
you engaged.
I think they actually did live there.
Yeah, they did.
Because it was talking about how they did live there, like they lived there for a while, and then
because even then
they
when
moved out and they lost it.
When his Mont goes died. To the real estate agent and he goes up and like is talking about how Jimmy's grandfather built that house with his own two hands, and the guy's like, dude, I got the deed right here.
They lost it in the 90s.
His grandpa died, and that's another part of the cycle. He died and they couldn't make the mortgage payments.
Which,
and that's how they lost it.
Which is actually very, that's what the movie's based on, is Jimmy Fail's actual, I think it was his actual grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
Died, and they were living in a Victorian house like that, and they lost it because they couldn't keep up the payments on it. So that's where that whole part of the story comes from, which is really interesting and kind of sad and kind of like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about the end scene?
The end scene.
Like the end scene?
Unless, do we have something
like
else?
The last two shots.
Yep.
I don't have much to talk about.
Dude, I mean, there's so much
wait,
to talk
on.
About.
Before we get to the very end scene with Jimmy, let's talk about like the moments leading up to that.
Yeah.
Where I think I could be wrong in order of like the sequence, but
well, now I'm
it goes Mont, Jimmy? Or does it go
Jimmy,
Mont,
Jimmy
Mont,
in
Mont.
The boat's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh,
is that
fully
the very, is that
Jimmy
very last, or is that before or after Mont's part?
There's one last scene with Mont after it. So it's like Mont, Jimmy, Mont, end.
Got it.
Paint the picture. Then.
You're right. So leading up to that point, this is very spoilers for everybody. If you haven't watched this movie and if you don't want to be spoiled for it.
I also don't think there's really much to spoil. I feel it's more of like a visual
it's
experience.
Not. It's
than
a
it
visual
is,
and
like,
emotional experience more than finding out what happens in the story.
I know what you're talking about.
So it all looks like, hey, you know what? They lost the house. The truth came out. Wasn't actually Jimmy's grandpa that built the house. But you know what? Things are going to be okay because he's with people that matter to him.
It felt kind of like it was like almost a
it felt like it was a
story
full
in that
circle
sense of
coming
like,
back like, hey, you know what, life isn't about just that one thing. Life's mm-hmm. about multiple things.
Yeah, life continues
just like people aren't just one thing. Life isn't just one thing.
I like
so
that,
he's
though.
Back with he's back with Mont and his Mont's grandfather, and they're watching the movie, and instead of in the earlier scene, whenever they're watching movies, Jimmy's always on the floor in front of the couch. He's on the couch with them. Like it's almost like he accepts
where
he is, and he's like, fine. And it's like, he's part of the family. And then
it's a very the grass is greener where you water it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And not
exactly.
That's
exactly.
a great point. Also I don't know how true this is or not, but every time they're sitting there watching a movie with the grandfather, I'm pretty sure they're always watching a Donald Glover movie.
They might be.
Yeah.
One
Danny
question about
Glover
that before we go on to the
Danny, stuff. My bad.
No, you're good. I just
Donald Glover. The what are they watching?
Like
Community
he's watching his own movie. Like
that's
telling
great.
His
they
movies
watching,
back to it.
They watching what's, what?
I'm not sure. I'm fairly certain I read it there. Oh, I don't know
that's
how
great.
True it is or not. But it's like it's one of those little tidbits.
What if it's probably Lethal Weapon?
Was he playing a blind person?
Yeah, or at least
or heart,
like heart
like
of
couldn't
heart of
see
vision.
Well,
yeah,
heart of vision.
Hard of
vision. I think that's just legally blind, but like still has some residual vision.
Yeah. I don't know the best way
he's
to say
got,
it.
He's
hard
got
of vision.
Vision.
He's got hard of vision.
his vision's mid, dude.
Mid vision.
Sounds like a weird superhero.
Well, I don't want to go to what I was talking about yet. Then,
average.
Because I was pretty, I thought it was very impactful, the scene where Mont goes to the viewing of the house and he goes back.
Yeah.
Wait, can't, before
I was,
say
just,
this,
I was just bringing up the moment, like
yeah,
the sequence
let's just,
of that.
Follow it, yeah.
Follow what?
What did you want to talk about? Is this something not at the end of the movie?
Yeah, it is. but it, I didn't catch until the fifth time watching.
Okay.
So
how end of the movie is this?
No,
this,
I know you're about to bring up.
It's about Mont. It's about the dining room.
Yeah.
So it kind of ties. It ties back, but it's
after
further
the Jimmy scene.
That's after the boat.
Is that after the Jimmy scene?
I'm fairly certain because it's.
Or it might go. Do you have this right now? Can you pull it up?
Either way, which one I'm talking about is further on. But I just thought it was cool. Remember when Jimmy tells him, "Hey, this is your house too. Pick a room."
Yeah,
he picked the dining room.
He did, but he fell asleep earlier in the movie. One of the first times they're in there, and he was cuddled up by the fire in the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's where the light spill was coming.
Yeah, and it was kind of a callback. You didn't know it at the time, but he felt at home in the dining room. Mont's just sleeping on the floor by himself. And then I thought it was cool, you know, fast forward down later in the movie where Jimmy's like, "Hey, man, pick your room." And he's like, "Any room?" And then he chooses the dining room. I thought it was kind of a cool little, it was like foreshadowing.
That dining room
is
fucking beautiful, by the
way.
It was sick.
And then that's where I was headed with when Mont goes back to the
show.
To the show.
Can we talk how Mont just fucking scares the people out of nowhere in that little small room?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, that's awesome. So random.
Well, it ties back to.
He's like, this is Jimmy's house, dude.
Yeah, this is.
Get out of here.
Well, no, it also ties back to like when they first get in the house and they're like, "We can do anything we want. This is our house. We could yell."
Yeah.
And then they start yelling, and Mont's like, "The neighbors, Jimmy." He's like, "Oh yeah, I got neighbors now." And then they both continue on screaming and yelling. But I also, with like the back part of the movie, I do think it was freaking great because, like we talked about, you know, they're getting back, and there's that cyclical nature of being
like,
back in the
you
house.
You think everything's gonna end up fine,
and like you don't picture or you don't pick this up until you've seen it at least once before, because you know the ending with Jimmy. But it's like they're laying in the bedroom, Mont falls asleep, and Jimmy's just sitting there looking at the picture of the sailboat on the water.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to, like, you know, Mont walking out into the living room, tucking his grandpa in, turning off the TV. When he turns it off, he reaches down and he sees the playbill for his play, which is also the title of the movie, which was a beautiful moment. And then you get the note, and the note that he wrote on the playbill, the note Jimmy wrote on the playbill, was actually really great. And like, it made sense, and it was a good, heartwarming sense of closure. But then to cut to the final scene of Jimmy, and I know you're going to want to talk about it.
I do.
It's
but
fucking awesome.
The other thing about the Mont part, and I'm pulling it up right here.
The montage of Mont.
It's
like,
Mont, and then the final is Jimmy.
Well,
Jimmy on the boat.
Jimmy is the very
no,
last
scene. It's the Mont montage of him in all of the scenes from the opening of the movie,
where,
but him solo. It's a cyclical series of shots.
It's so sad because it's like Mont had a friend who he
understood him
with. Yeah, understood him and did everything with. And then the one that I always think about is him at work.
Yeah, that's the most striking out of all of them.
That one was just like sad because he's like doing his job, talking to a lady, blah, 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 like still having a good time with Jimmy, chilling with him. But then when he's alone, he's just standing there. Like he died inside a little bit.
Yeah. That's
just like, it's like, damn.
Out of that montage, that was definitely like the most,
for me,
impressionable
like,
shot.
Yeah.
But
is this it?
This is it. It's just, I thought it was.
Also, the house has totally changed. They hate the house.
That's what I'm talking. They renovated it. That's the sad part to me that I caught.
That's a whole part of the film is the gentrification.
Absolutely.
City changing.
They just,
the house change.
You really only caught that on this last watch?
No, I've just.
Okay, I was about to say, dude, you need to get.
They just gentrified the house.
He's talking about why he picks the living room is because he fell asleep in it before, right? Is that
it's
you,
just. It,
that's
they,
what you caught.
They showed that he likes the room. He likes the living room.
But where it pauses and lingers when he's going to the open house, he's in that room.
He's
again,
in the dining room and it's white now.
But it's renovated,
They gutted all of the character. You know,
I know.
They leave the. The archways.
Do they actually do that, or do they build a set and like?
No, these are all on location.
Yeah,
so they actually change the house.
Probably,
I'm not sure.
The way it looks renovated is probably the true bones of what the house is now. And then they added all of
the old looking
shit on top of it. Probably,
you're probably not wrong.
It's still old looking. There's all the ornate.
Yeah,
it's
still got the nice trim,
but they painted it white.
It felt smaller, a little more, not claustrophobic, smaller and cozier and more homely. And then when they paint it white, feels like stark modern.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of cyclical, like you said.
It's sad because it feels like it was this piece of history and now it no longer is.
Yeah, someone came in, spent a bunch of money, and then it's changed.
So we've talked about Mont's end. Now let's talk about Jimmy's end.
Absolutely.
He's rowing the boat.
Where?
going.
He's going. He's finally leaving.
Yeah.
So he's rowing to new beginnings.
Yeah. All I could think about, you guys probably would not relate to this at all. Like I said a million times, I grew up in the Bay Area and we used to always like history of California and stuff. And the Alcatraz Island is in the San Francisco Bay. And Alcatraz is a prison island. And prisoners used to get sent there from all over. And the prisoners, there was three very famous prisoners that escaped and were never found. And they rowed a boat made out of raincoats glued together, made like a pontoon boat that they, like an inflatable boat, that they apparently sailed to Angel Island, which is kind of north of that, or out into the bay somewhere. And supposedly they either made it or they died. And that's what I thought when he was rowing that boat, is like he's on a rowboat in the bay. You see the bridge in the background, which is one of those like big like things about the bay, is like the bridge and how they went from Alcatraz and they probably like ended up drowning in the water or something. I was just like, he's dead. He's going to die. Like, that's what I thought.
Online, a lot of people thought that, did he commit, was he going to like commit suicide?
I don't know. And that's a
I know the answer, but I'll.
You know the answer?
You know the answer?
Interesting. Joe Talbot.
It's a fairly well-known thing in the Bay Area. Maybe not as well-known as I think it is, but that story of this prisoners.
No, I've heard that story.
If you wanted to do something that was like you wanted to like commit suicide, kind of, there, a big thing that people do is, this is kind of dark,
the bridge.
People like to jump off of the bridge.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude.
But I feel like Jimmy would be a little more poetic in that he would.
I can see that. That's like the final love letter to the city.
He kind of get lost and get sucked out into the sea and just die that way. So I don't know.
It's
what
like
the
captain
is.
On the Titanic.
Yeah,
he's just going down.
He's going down the ship, and it's just kind of like, I don't know.
It wasn't a sad ending. He was rowing to new beginnings.
That's fair.
And they liked it better than him getting on the BART and leaving the city.
Yeah, it's way more poetic.
It's more poetic this way.
He would have left the city and gone to a different place on BART because it's really cheap and you can do that really easy. But
no, I think that's the way to get Jimmy out of the story was absolutely beautiful, especially with having the last shot have the Golden Gate Bridge in the background. It was just like, well,
I don't know if that was the Golden Gate. Is that the Golden Gate or was that the Bay Bridge?
I don't know. You're from there, dude.
I feel
both of them look very similar. And if it's dark enough, you can't really tell because the color, like, you can't really see the color.
Gotcha.
Let's see.
But anyways,
let's give it a rating.
That's exactly
that
how I was going to segue.
Be...
But hang on, let's define our rating a little bit.
Our rating?
Yeah, like, don't just rate it out of a star. If we have to put it into like a category.
Like PG-13.
Like, would you rate it out of your top A24 films? Would you rate it out of, like, your top dramas? Like, we need to define the rating somehow.
I'm going to rate it on the cinematography. Because it's not my favorite
movie. Let's rate it on three different things.
Okay.
Overall, enjoyment, everything included. Cinematography is two. And what's the third one?
Where it lands in your list of A24 films.
A24 films specifically?
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't seen enough, but...
So it's going to be pretty high on that list then.
Maybe instead of A24 films, we rate it on just overall cinematography, and then what's a different aspect of the film that it did really well that we want to compare it to other ones with?
I'm probably going to cut this little bit out.
Soundtrack was great.
The emotional impact it had on you.
Okay.
So do you have at least five other movies that emotionally impacted you pretty hard?
I don't.
Yeah, for sure.
You do?
All right. Maybe we'll just go with those two.
But the emotional part is like was probably totally different for him.
That's fair.
Because to me, it was the cinematography emotionally impacted me.
All right. Let's just go with your overall, and then one category that you think of. It can be the same or it can be different.
Just whatever it. Whatever it did for you.
Overall,
what did it do for you?
We're going to talk about cinematography. I don't know exactly what I'm picking yet. What you're picking yet. But
I'm going to lose canon on this one. I don't know what
I'm
going to say.
Right.
Yeah, straight up.
Do we want to take a little
break?
Sojourn the right way.
Dude, what are you trying to say?
We take a little break.
Spit it out.
What does Mont say? What are they? The splits? Schwitz. Little Schwitz break.
Yeah. That's what I meant. A little sojourn, I think.
I don't know. Dude.
Sojourn?
Like a little stay. Like a little, like we're going to take a little break. We're going to
take a little recce.
Is it sequester? It's like looking at it. Okay.
I know.
But
you,
I feel like
you're right.
Let's take a moment.
I mean, we've let's just been chit chatting for a hot sec. So we've kind of already been.
Should we take a moment of silence?
Yeah. All right, we had to kind of sit back and just discuss amongst ourselves how we're going to rate this freaking movie because we really don't know. There's a lot of different ways you could rate it, and I think we all have a different kind of thing in mind, so we're just going to do our own things with how we rate this movie. But I want to start off with our guest, the in-house DP of 12 Midnight and a huge cinematography nerd, Dylan Wallace. What would you, you know, how would you rate this movie?
Are we going number scale?
Yeah, I like it. One to 10?
Your top 10, if it makes your top 10, or like where you think it might land.
Well, you could rate movies a million ways, so I'm just going to rate this based on
just on like a number scale. You're going to give it a grade, basically,
yeah, I mean,
out of 10.
Let's give it out of a 10,
he's,
like 10
he's
stars.
He's
going to
grade
kind of
it, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll call it like a 9.5 for the cinematography for me.
Got it.
Do you
have an example of something that would beat it or something it just beats out? I'm putting you on the spot right there. We took like a 2 second
like,
break.
Really. Well, I guess we could kind of to preface that for you. Like, how would you say it compares to your thoughts on like the way Moonlight was shot?
Yeah.
Totally different.
Absolutely. It's different styles.
Totally, yes.
Do you think
totally
one
different.
Beats one out or no?
That this movie for me was almost like it smacked me in the face when I watched it.
It taught you something.
It almost like galaxy-brained my brain.
It awakened your third eye. I became woke. Yeah.
Not that kind of woke that's now hijacked. More of like, but in all seriousness.
It awakened your...
It almost connected all the dots that were floating around in my head that... That is what cinematography is.
This is one of the first films you saw when you started shooting stuff, right? Like
yeah,
when you
had,
really started shooting stuff.
I had been
stuff
shooting
as
for a while, but this
like
one
as a job, though, right?
I watched it about 2 years ago.
I would say like a year and a half. Maybe.
Year and a half, maybe.
Okay.
And then it
so
just.
You'd already been shooting.
I had never watched a movie before that.
You'd
when
never
I
watched
fin-
a movie before.
I had never.
Let the man speak.
I'd never watched a movie before that when I finished, or even throughout the movie. I was glued and I was like, dude, because every frame in a movie is an intentional choice, you know, and every camera movement is an intentional choice. So to see Adam, the DP, to see every single shot was like almost perfectly paired with what it needed to be. And just the slow zooms, the framing that he chose of, you know, a long frame within a frame, the long, you know, the zoom, the 24 to 290 zoom from super far away. It was a masterpiece for me. And I know like some people, you know, would probably disagree.
So I agree with you that this movie is like what did you say? A 9.5 out of 10?
I said 9.5. I don't want to give it a 10. You know, there's gotta be,
I don't think there ever is a 10.
Yeah,
I don't think there ever will be a 10 because there's always something you could do better.
Yeah.
You'd always find something you do better. I'd say it's 9 to 9.5. In terms of what part of the cinematography that really puts it that high for me is the blocking. The blocking in this movie is really good. They place characters in the scene and place things in the scene really well and is beautiful and feels really well. And it's not just, I guess it's blocking and composition. Is really well.
Composition's
versus,
crazy.
Versus something that a different movie that I think does something better than this movie is lighting. I think one of my favorite movies for lighting is Blade Runner 2049. I think that movie is lit better than almost any movie I've ever seen. I think that's beautiful, but in a different way.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about composition and
that's
blocking,
mainly what I'm talking about. Composition is what I would lead with.
I was just trying to get what you wanted out of it.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I think this composition of the landscapes, the the really weird shots that are like looking up at the house, yes, like super camera inferior to the house, is just like, damn, it's like beautiful, but it also makes you feel like weird.
It's like, subtleness that, mm-hmm, where he just, like you're saying, the blocking specifically, mm-hmm, there's a car shot, and when they're in the Mike Epps, that's his real name, I don't know, I can't remember his real character name.
Dude, yeah, in the car that,
the dude in the car that stole their car.
Yeah, it's, yeah, Jimmy's old home.
But it's mounted on the door, Mont's in the back seat, Jimmy's in the passenger seat, and the other guy's driving, and you see them all. You
know, oh, yeah. That was,
and it's a triangle.
That was sweet.
It's just, yep, you know, I mean, I could go on and on, yeah, and on, because you could, like, dissect
blocking,
every single frame.
The blocking composition is a masterpiece in this. I think it's beaten out in other aspects, like I said, lighting, sure, by other movies, but, yep, I mean, at the same time, like, that's not what this movie was about.
For sure.
No. So I agree with you. It's definitely a solid, if I was being more cynical, maybe like an 8, but like, I don't want to be more cynical like that. So I'm going to say like like a solid 9, 9.5. It's like,
yeah,
it's beautiful. There's no shot in this movie is going to be like, that's not that.
There's no throwaways.
Yeah.
There's no throwaways.
There's no shot that didn't look good. And sometimes you see movies where it's just like, there's a shot that doesn't necessarily look bad. It's just not interesting.
It's more of a utility shot.
Mm-hmm. I feel like almost every shot in this movie is interesting.
Yeah. And that's where I was going to go with like my rating or ranking is like overall, like I don't think there's a movie that keeps you engaged or keeps the viewer captivated, at least for me, quite as well as this one does. I mean, there's a lot of movies that are interesting and there's a lot of movies that really like keep you engaged, but like, I don't know. I was watching this movie late the other night. I've watched it multiple times, but every single time, even if I have someone knocks on my door or whatever, I'm walking to the door backwards because I'm not trying to miss out on a frame that's about to pop up on screen. And like, there's not many other movies that I go and break my neck for to stay and watch it, you know?
So what do you say your rank is?
My rank on like purely on that, I would say like a 9.6.
9.6 on overall. That's not cinematography. That's overall movie.
Overall, the way it engages the viewer and keeps your attention, because there's like a lot of the elements that are going into the movie. Like I said earlier, they might not be technically the best, but the way they are all combined in a unified look and hooks you into it, it really like it does that for me.
So your Rotten Tomatoes is a 96%. Is that what that means? Is that what that means? I think it is.
9.5. Sure.
Sure.
Move the decimal.
Yeah.
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 Because that's your overall. Do you have an overall or you just want to do the cinematography?
I'd probably give it like a overall 8, 7 to 8, somewhere in there. I was just like, you know, because it's not a perfect movie. There are parts of it that I think are clunky. You know, sometimes there's like not enough context given, like you said earlier. Mm-hmm. And I do think sometimes it detracts and it kind of takes away but I also want to preface, I do think this movie's not for general public.
I think it's something that the general public would absolutely enjoy.
I think
enjoy.
They would, but I think it's more for like a cinephile. Like they're really going to love this movie.
I mean, yeah, but I think that also ties into like pretty much any movie. Cause a lot of the movies nowadays that you'll watch, they're all made from like people who have studied film and they know how to do those references in mainstream cinema. And unless you are a cinephile or a movie buff, you're not going to pick up on it. And it's like, I don't know, like talk about like a Tarantino movie. He's a really good person at the callback to classic cinema. And it's like, even if you haven't watched all of classic cinema, you're still going to enjoy his movies. You might not get some of the references, but it's like, I still think there's things there that the general public would enjoy.
No, I think it'll draw you in.
Yeah.
As someone that doesn't know anything about it, it'll draw you in. But I'm mainly like, I think if you understand a lot of the elements of filmmaking and cinematography or anything in production, I think you're really gonna see this movie and be wowed.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So kind of going off what you said you think it is for the general public.
I do.
Not that I don't think it's for the general public. I agree with what Dylan's trying to say. And I think this is kind of what you're saying is like, if someone doesn't care about cinematography, there's less in this movie for them to be drawn to. But somebody that might not know cinematography, but is still interested in it and they like the interesting visuals, it's definitely a really solid movie for somebody to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But like if somebody could care less, I know some people, so like some of my buddies in college, they didn't give a shit about cinematography. Like, they could care less. They could watch the blandest thing ever and not feel any different than watching some like the most visually interesting movies. So for that kind of person, I would say this movie's like a 7. Like the story's not bad. It's just not. It's not like it's not super interesting. Maybe even like a 6.5 in terms of like interesting story. But if you have any amount of like interest in visuals and cinematography, then this movie is definitely like 8.7 to 9.3.
You can teach a course on it.
Yeah, you
can.
I was going to say that exact same
thing. It's an approachable type of cinematography too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the Blade Runners where it's like these super fantastical, crazy lighting schemes.
Yes.
It's fairly simple blocking.
Tons of natural light.
Composition, a lot of like natural feeling light, like you said. It's just like, yeah, I think it's a, if somebody's interested, even if you don't know much about it, but you're interested in the visuals and it's a totally solid movie, you're going to love it. 8.7 to 9.3.
Yeah.
And if you don't care about that at all, like if you could care less, if you're like tone deaf, but for visuals, then it's going to be like a, like maybe 6.5, 7. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like if you really don't care about cinematography at all, you're probably not going to love this movie that much. But I mean,
all right. Shit. I think we're at our wit's end here. So anybody got any final thoughts?
If you watch the movie, shoot Todd or Dom or me or 12 Midnight a message.
Yeah.
Tell us what you thought.
Tell us what you think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
what's your rating? What do you rate it?
Like and overall?
What category are you rating it? No, I'm talking to people.
Oh, I mean, I kind of already did that earlier. I gave it a 9.5 for
I'm
its
not
ability to
about
like
you.
What the fuck are you trying to say?
He just said, if you watch the movie, give us a message. And I was saying, tell us what you rate it.
Oh, you're saying
yeah.
You looked at me when you fucking
honest.
Said that.
I thought you were telling him to
yeah,
tell
yeah.
Tell
you were you. Looking at me when you said that, dude. Get your shit in order.
So, Todd, what do you rate the movie? Like, what is your rating
for
this movie?
You can shut your mouth, okay?
Okay, what if you at home rate the movie? Sorry, I don't want to look at camera. That's uncomfortable. I want to look at the people I'm talking
to. I understand what you're trying to do.
Yes.
For any of our people at home, if you guys want to write into the show and tell us what your thoughts, how you would rate it, or where you would rank it in your personal list, feel free to do so. We got multiple avenues to where you can write out to us. Email, Instagram. We also have a website.
Mail.
We don't really check that, but
paper mail.
Honestly, yeah.
Do we have paper mail?
Send us. We have a mailbox.
I have a house. So,
we're going to put Dylan's home address on the ticker down here for you guys to just write.
That's probably true.
And go to his house.
Mail here.
Yeah. But anyways, this
make
is
sure
an absolute...
you send your bills there.
All right. Can we wrap this up, please?
Yeah, we can wrap it.
Jeez, bod. All right. No, this was an absolute fun episode. And there's a ton of us there's a ton that we can talk about this film. But I mean, it's always fun having Dylan Wallace jump in, hop on the pod. We want to have him around every now and again. You know, he'll be reoccurring. He'll come back a time or two.
I'll have to find another movie that matches the theme.
Yeah. You know, now that we know what Dylan's personal preference is for films,
sad movies that display toxic masculinity.
So we're just gonna like, so it's just Euphoria next is what
honestly
like, haven't watched it, can't watch it.
Yeah, it's I'm
too,
with that
too much.
That's
but
too
anyways
much.
This has too been deep. Another episode of Theater Cleaners. Tune in, we're gonna keep doing this until we don't have people watch anymore, I guess. But
yeah,
keep us going, please. Thank you.
Peace.
Peace.
Thanks for watching.